Hello, yeah. And welcome to Talking Sense, the sensibility podcast presented by Ungagged. I'm your co-host, Kat.
And I'm your co-host, Erin.
And today we're going to rant about abortion. No, we're going to rant about how people are putting barriers in the way of human rights.
Yes. So we're recording this not long after the aftermath of the Dobbs decision in the U.S., which overturned Roe versus Wade, which was the 50-year-old precedent establishing the right to legal abortion across the United States. As we speak, 26 states have laws going into effect preventing women from accessing, or preventing people who need access to abortion from accessing them. And we thought we have an interview coming up with an American lawyer who can talk about this in more depth, but we wanted to talk a little bit first about the Scottish context.
Yeah, so being an American myself, this probably didn't come as much of a shock to me, as even though it's infuriating. It's going to affect all of us in some way or another. It already has, I think. It's really... Before we delve into the background and the context of the overturn of Roe versus Wade, I just want to first of all say I'm really glad to live in Scotland, where we are having an argument about not protesting outside of places where you can get an abortion, which is really is what's been keeping me going.
Yeah, because right now there's two conversations that we're having here in Scotland. Yes, one is about buffer zones, basically establishing space outside of any kind of health center that provides sexual and reproductive health care to prevent sort of harassment of patients who are going to have abortion care. But the other thing we're also discussing sort of in the public sphere in Scotland right now is the fact that abortion is in fact still criminalized both here and in the rest of the UK. And the only exception is when you are having an abortion that is approved by two doctors within the medical system. So that is also something that is being discussed about basically if you had acquired your own medication and self-managed an abortion, that is technically still a criminal act in this country.
And I will say that this is something that Suzanne McLaughlin, who is a columnist for The National and, you know, a great feminist and socialist, as independent supporters, this is a point where we need to take a look at this weakness, because England is better at this than us. They are better at providing abortion for people who need it, for keeping people from being harassed. There's bylaws in certain counties for buffer zones. It's not legislated nationally, because they can't legislate England nationally. But this is something that England does better than us. And we're supposed to be this open, inclusive, progressive society with human rights at its heart. But this is an area where we need to improve. And we need to improve. And that's part of what drives me to like convince people to vote for independence. This is somewhere where we need to improve to make the case effectively for independence.
Yeah. And there's a third thing that we're also having discussions about in Scotland now, which is that there is not a single health board in Scotland that provides abortion up to the 24-week limit. So if you need an abortion later in gestation, you have to be sent to England to...
And by later, that means second trimester.
Yeah, no, yeah, just like any... I think the latest anywhere in Scotland provides is like 18 weeks or something like that. No one provides it up to 24 weeks, which is it's just the legal limit. And if you need an abortion between 18 and in some health boards, it's as low as 15 weeks, you need to be sent to England for that. So as independent supporters, that's something else we need to reckon with as well.
And also, if someone needs an abortion later in their second trimester, you know, let's not infantilize the person trying to get an abortion. You know, if you need one and you find out you need one at 20 weeks, you need to be able to access one.
There's been like this sort of looking on in horror at what has happened in the US in terms of the Supreme Court being stacked with justices appointed by a president that is increasingly revealed to have been criminal. Pending the outcome of the January 6th inquiry, might end up in prison soon. There are issues here that do need to be addressed, and not just in terms of buffer zones, not just in terms of access to abortion up to the 24-week limit, not just in terms of the fact that self-managed abortion is effectively criminalized here, but also the fact that Scotland is presently stuck in the United Kingdom. And while abortion is devolved, basically all other forms of human rights law aren't, and the UK is being pulled out of the jurisdiction of the European Court of Human Rights, and a new human, quote-unquote, Bill of Rights is being introduced at the UK Parliament that does nothing to safeguard rights and weakens them in many cases. And I think there is something to be said for the kind of destruction of the legitimacy of the US Supreme Court being part of a longer term and globally spread trend in delegitimizing judicial systems and pulling out of broader human rights bodies, in the trends we're seeing in places like Poland of banning abortions where they weren't illegal before. This is part of a global trend, and we need to be very careful because we are not immune.
Exactly. It was in Hungary and Poland, I think, you know, they started with LGBT rights and then abortion rights in one of those countries. I cannot remember right now for the life of me, but it is like domestic violence has been decriminalized because for some reason the rights of privacy in the home there is upheld, but not the right to privacy inside your own body, mm-hmm. apparently. But it is, it's like the patriarchy fighting back, even though they're still in charge. Like, it's ridiculous. But like we will touch on later in the show, the battle for human rights, and that's not something that ever ends. It ends when you die.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's important that you touched on how in both Poland and Hungary, that this started as sort of objection to LGBTQ rights, or what in I believe both countries is called sort of anti-gender, because anything to do with LGBTQ rights or feminism can be referred to as gender ideology in many countries. And of course, we have a very strong strain of that here in Scotland, where the people who are against trans rights and against LGBTQ rights are also the same people who are protesting outside abortion clinics. So there were protesters outside of Glasgow Pride this past weekend, and people have noted that it is the same people in those photos as are in the photos outside the Sandyford Clinic. You see that there are you know, gender criticals like Kathleen Stock actively interacting with and praising anti-choice figures. Meanwhile, trans women are on the front lines fighting for abortion care and bodily autonomy.
Yeah, I was at a abortion rights rally here in Edinburgh outside the consulate, where I was sad to see, and I will say the speakers there, some of them were gender critical, and some of them were trans, some of them, you know, were politicians, some of them were ordinary people. Not to say that the other three aren't ordinary, but you know what I mean. One of the first speakers was trans, and she was shouted over by gender critical women. And the sad thing was that she was making some really good points about how we were in this fight together, the fight for bodily autonomy, the fight for privacy. And as you'll see in the US, all those laws are really linked, and the rights to have an abortion is directly linked to the right to privacy. And that, you know, gay marriage is being legalized is linked to that right to privacy. It was really depressing and disheartening to see that, you know, a trans woman is getting hollered over. You know, later a man got up to speak from a trades union group that in solidarity, and then nobody shouted over him. So I don't really get why this is a battle to choose. I might add that a gender critical woman, and one of the one of the more provocative gender critical activists, got up speaking about the right to abortion, and she was not shouted over at all, or neither of them. There was quite a few of them, but none of them got shouted over. And they didn't talk about, only one of them talked about their ideology. The rest of them talked about how important it was to have access to abortion. And I just, you know, if there's nothing, if there's any issue where we can come together, I think this is where we could maybe reach a few people that we've lost to this, you know, insanity and say, look, we are on the same side.
One can hope. I don't know. I'm glad to hear that not all of the gender criticals have fallen in with the traditional conservatives the way that quite a lot of them have. But I mean, I don't know. I think Judith Butler is right about it being basically a proto-fascist movement, and that there's no, I don't know if we'll ever be able to find common ground. I hope that some of them will see that the way that some of the very prominent gender critical figures have fallen in with anti-choice figures, but I don't know.
I will say that, like, if I think it's a personal choice of, you know, there needs to be bridges built, or there needs to be bridges left unburnt, mm-hmm. maybe, but that's up to everybody individually to decide whether you have the resilience or the will to do that. Cause like, don't feel bad if you're like, no, that's not for me. That's too much, you know, but I'm always looking for a way to, you know, that maybe one person goes, you know, she was making sense there, and just to have that niggling in the back of their head. Maybe mm-hmm. that's just a way for me to make myself feel better. But, like, obviously, don't do that. If you don't feel like you have the energy, take care of your mental health and your own resilience. Mm-hmm. 'Cause we need everybody on the in the fight that we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so now that we've contextualized sort of this within the with what the developments that are happening in Scotland, and the fact that we have fights on our hands in terms of the buffer zones, decriminalization, and what was the third thing?
Access during the second trimester.
Access during second trimester. And within the broader situation we find ourselves in with the UK removing us from human rights bodies, and within Europe there being broader fights with abortion being criminalized in Poland and being further restricted, though not criminalized, in Hungary. In Malta, of course, there quite famously recently being a case of not being able to access abortion. It's, I think, time to turn to our guest to talk about what has happened in the US and what lessons we can learn from that.
So we're going to take a closer look at the context and the background to the overturn of Roe versus Wade by talking with Naomi from Democrats Abroad in Norway. So Naomi, can we have you introduce yourself?
Yes. Thank you for inviting me to talk about this. Like you said, I am with Democrats Abroad. I'm the Global Women's Caucus Vice Chair. I live in Norway, where I'm also on the Executive Committee of Democrats Abroad Norway. And I am also trained as a lawyer, so I am coming at this from a couple of angles, but mostly, you know, horror and anger, like a lot of people who cared about reproductive justice in the United States and around the world.
Naomi, since you've got a legal background, you're actually just a great person to talk to about this, because I think a lot of our listeners in Scotland might not have the context to understand how the American legal system works with regard to these huge sort of landmark decisions that shape access to rights across the country, and why this now means that abortions are banned in some states and not others.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated, complex system of state laws, the federal laws that, you know, interact with the state laws, and then the Supreme Court's power over all of that. So to explain the situation we're in, there was a Supreme Court decision in the 1970s, the early 1970s, that established that people in the United States have the right to an abortion via the Fourth Amendment in our Constitution, which guarantees a right to privacy. So the right to an abortion was guaranteed under people's right to privacy, which is the same right that gives people the right to marry who they choose, have relationships with who they choose, raise their children in the way they choose, a lot of things that are considered pretty fundamental civil and human rights. And since that decision, the opponents of abortion in the United States have been running a campaign to overturn that decision, both at the state level within states that are more conservative about abortion, and with cases that they're trying to get up to the Supreme Court. So increasingly, activists were filing cases with more and more restrictions around abortion, knowing that they would get challenged in state court, and hoping that those cases would eventually make their way through the legal system to the Supreme Court, where they were also working to install right-wing anti-abortion judges who would eventually find a reason to overturn Roe versus Wade and to say that the Constitution, under the right to privacy, does not say that you have a right to an abortion. And so that's the situation we're in now. They found a case, it made its way through. There's three new justices on the court who are decidedly anti-abortion, and that was enough to overturn the right.
Okay, thank you for explaining that. It's fairly complicated because of
I'm nodding at you in an audio medium, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It's fairly complicated, sort of the patchwork of state laws. And I think sort of it's kind of important for our Scottish listeners to know that some of the more conservative states already had basically trigger laws in place, where they were laws that basically said if Roe is overturned, then this law immediately goes into effect within 30 days, banning virtually all abortions. So there's now a significant number of states where abortions are banned or will be within a certain number of days. As well.
It's 26 states, so more than half of the country. Yeah.
Wow. And some of these states are seeking, and this will be subject to challenge, but some of these states are seeking to criminalize women traveling out of state for the purpose of obtaining an abortion, which that probably won't stand, because that seems like, but who knows?
It's one of those same things with nobody thought Roe would be overturned.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
They found the case that made it. So we really can't make, I mean,
yeah.
I also think that that is just a wild legal theory that will never stand up. And yet we are in this reality where we can't count anything.
Yeah, exactly.
And for our Scottish listeners, that's very odd in America, where we have a written constitution, for something to get unwritten. You know, I think sometimes here we don't really pay attention to, in the UK, anything, like, there is no precedent, really. They can do whatever they want, and it's just kind of something that's always there. But this is something that, although my entire life there has been an active campaign to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
This is, you know, when it was leaked. So the opinion was leaked. What day was it leaked?
Oh gosh, it was almost 6 weeks ago now. I don't know the exact date, but it was virtually identical to the final decision. There were no changes.
It was, and so
concurrence from Thomas, which was even worse.
Yes. I can't decide in my brain if it was better or worse to have the leak first. I feel like it made me process it before it actually came. But I don't know. How do you feel about that, Naomi?
I personally agree. I mean, we knew that these justices were appointed because the right wanted to overturn Roe versus Wade. And no matter what they said in front of Congress, which they straight up lied to, let's be honest, they lied and said that Roe was settled precedent and they wouldn't vote to overturn it. And then first chance they got, they voted to overturn it. So the leaked opinion was horrifying, and it's horrible for people in the United States, but I don't think it was shocking. So then once the opinion came out, it was, to me anyway, okay, it's happening, time to mobilize. So when the final opinion was published, yes, horrifying, horrible, not shocking, hopefully galvanizing for people, but also just, I mean, it was a dark, sad day. Like, women, people lost the ability to have an abortion that day in clinics, and are currently suffering from it. And the fallout as this gets, you know, as these trigger laws go into effect, will be worse and worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was listening to, Slate has a really excellent podcast out right now about Roe versus Wade, their Slow Burn podcast. And
I love Slow Burn.
So good. So the current season is about Roe versus Wade. Obviously, this has been, it's out now, so it's been in production for months, but you know, everybody kind of, even before the leak, everyone kind of knew something big was coming because of the two justices that Trump got to appoint. But what's Something that they brought up on that podcast, and something that I think about as a historian quite a lot, is that we have sort of a narrative of history, social justice, civil rights, women's history, feminism, that suggests sort of a dark past and a continuously upward trajectory. And something that they have pointed out actually was that while abortion was criminalized in the US in the 1880s, it wasn't really until the 1960s that those laws started being enforced with any regularity, and that a lot of the 1880s legislation referred to things like abortion being illegal after quickening, which is like 20 weeks ish, depending on whether you felt fetal movement or not.
Very sciencey.
Very sciencey, because it's the 1880s. Yeah. But it wasn't until the 1950s really that they started to really enforce these laws, because 1950s were sort of after women had entered the workforce during the Second World War. It was when there was more premarital sex happening. It's when teenagers were dating in a serious way more, and women were actually having these relationships, and that's when they started to really enforce these laws. So that actually is like a trajectory of things getting worse before they got better. And so I think it's what's actually kind of horrifying to think about is people say about, oh, we're going back to the 1950s, but actually this is so much worse, because those trigger laws, a lot of them are much, much stricter than the previous anti-abortion laws. Some of them are from conception, which that isn't a medical term. Some of them have no exceptions for health. Some of them have no exceptions at all. Not that anyone should need an exception. Everyone should have control over their own body. But the fact is, the older criminal laws talked about quickening and like maybe if you're going to die, but like some of these don't have any exceptions whatsoever. So it's actually worse than it was.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. It's worse for the people that need abortions. It's worse for healthcare providers, because I mean, in the 50s and earlier, they didn't have all the advances to diagnose ectopic pregnancies and fetal abnormalities and all these things that are really, really dangerous and kill people that are pregnant. And now that we have that knowledge, these laws are purposely turning their back on it and making up this sort of fake protection of life and sanctity of life, which is, you know, I don't know if we're allowed to curse, but that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
So,
this is a Scottish podcast, so
I have to like do my best. I know Scotland has like some great insults, so if I could like incorporate that slang also. So yeah, I mean, it's not only worse like in terms of what you just talked about, but it's also like a lot worse and harder to bring a child into this world right now that you don't have the funds or social support to pay for than it was in the 50s. And I'm not saying it was great for a lot of people then who were forced into childbirth, into childbearing, but I mean, this government, this country, the US, is often actively hostile towards supporting people who need it when they do have children. The foster care system is overloaded. There's not support for parents and families who need help with food and childcare and schooling. And so not only are these laws worse for the people that are actually having medical issues, it's after the child is born, there's nothing for them. And these laws are going to make that happen a lot more often.
Mm-hmm. There's also so much more surveillance now than there was, right? Like if you were pregnant in the 50s or 60s, there's basically no one else was going to know and until you figured out how to deal with it. But now there's, you know, people are really concerned that period tracking apps sort of give away whether or not you might be pregnant. Medical records are a lot more consistently kept than they were. It's harder for people to just sort of vanish. It's harder for there to be providers who are off grid. Though on the upside, one thing that we do have now is they didn't have mifepristone back then.
That's true.
And that fortunately is something that there seems to be developing an underground to supply, but that is at great legal risk to the people involved.
That's something I kind of want to touch on. So you're talking about a medical abortion during the early weeks, like first 12 weeks, or don't quote me on that. It's something to that effect.
Not a doctor,
not a healthcare professional, but it is for early in pregnancy only. Something we have in Scotland is that during the pandemic, they were allowing women to take people who are pregnant. Let's just throw a quick disclaimer. So if we talk about women in the 50s, that's because that's what the legislation and everything said. But let's be clear, not only women need abortions. So everyone who needs an abortion should be able to have access to an abortion, just to put that out there. But I digress. What was I saying? I've been seeing a lot of the coat hanger signs, and like, if that's what speaks to you, fine. But I've seen some really good articles written about how, you know, the coat hanger symbolism isn't really the gotcha that we think it is, because really it's not that's not your option right now. So like, people who need abortions need to know that they can get access to this if they need one, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, I agree with you, and I've had this conversation with friends and family and co-activists about like the coat hanger symbolism. I get it. It is very stark, and it really does take you to, it shows you exactly what you mean. So I understand people wanting to use it and rely on it. And I also very much take on board the messaging from the people that are doing the work right now to provide abortions to people who need it, which is that it's safe, it's medical, it's safer than aspirin in some cases. A coat hanger is not the option. It is now a couple pills that are prescribed by your doctor and a very normal medical procedure that is basic healthcare. And so we especially now don't want to be scaring people who need abortions into thinking that that's their only option and that it's dangerous and bad and something you have to keep secret and can result in your death. It is a very safe, normal medical procedure that is still available to many, many people that need it. And so it's important to get that messaging out there in order to help people who need it rather than scaring people and using this sort of shock value imagery to rile people up into the fight. You should get into the fight. Absolutely. You should be advocating for abortion everywhere in your state, in your, you know, with the federal government at every level you can in education, but you should also be helping people access it in the safe and medical way that they can.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who are in like the first trimester of their pregnancies, who can get access to that, that is going to be something that is life-saving, especially as it is a fairly easy to acquire drug in many places because it is an ulcer treatment. But there are going to be people who are in a huge amount of danger because of medical issues that occur later in pregnancy, or as you said, ectopic pregnancies where they go to a hospital and then are denied an abortion, even though ectopic pregnancies cannot be viable. Cases like, you know, the case that inspired Ireland's campaign to repeal their abortion ban, you know, the death of Savita Halappanavar, you know, she died in the hospital because of an incomplete miscarriage, basically. There have been cases of women dying in Poland after their abortion ban, again, because of incomplete miscarriages and then dying of sepsis. And there's just a case in Malta where an American woman had to organize her own evacuation to Spain to have an abortion after, again, an incomplete miscarriage. And these are cases that can't be helped by a medication underground and are basically held hostage by the medical system. And these are the cases that I'm really, really worried about.
To circle back to, in Scotland now, made it as permanent as they can. You know, it's not in law, but it right now it is continuously, you're allowed to have those prescriptions at home. You don't have to go to a center. So that's one good thing that we've got going on here right now. But it is really important. I think AOC tweeted about how to get access to those because it is still legal right now to give people that information. So it's good to check out and kind of keep that in your back pocket because you never know. You never know when you're going to bump into somebody who's in a bad spot and needs some help.
I just want to zone something you said that I've been thinking about too, which is it's still legal to give that advice right now. I would say in my professional legal capacity and my activist capacity, that's important to give that advice, even if it might be illegal, and it is not at risk to you to give that advice. You can make your own assessment about your own legal liability, but you know, like Martin Luther King said, I think you have a duty not to follow unjust laws, and this is an unjust decision. And I personally would be happy to break it if it meant getting somebody, you know, access to treatment that they needed as a person who is pregnant or doesn't want to be pregnant. And I think AOC said that too, though I don't want to put words into her mouth, but I hope people are, you know, thinking about the level of risk that they're willing to take and the level of risk there is for people who can now not access abortion because of this terrible, unjust decision. So I'm not advising anybody to break the law, but I would say that I personally would be happy to do it in this circumstance.
Yeah. And if, as if it isn't bad enough that basically because of this decision, you've got 26 states that have implemented some form of abortion ban and are trying to prevent people from traveling out of state to get abortions, and that this is sort of a loss of bodily autonomy and ability to sort of control your own destiny. Clarence Thomas's kind of concurrent decision, where he specifically said, well, this decision doesn't target any previous, doesn't apply to any other decision, any other decisions, but we really should revisit, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Obergefell, is it that? Obergefell, yeah. Lawrence, and Griswold. And just so, again, for my Scottish listeners who might not be familiar with those Supreme Court decisions, Obergefell is same-sex marriage. Lawrence is basically struck down all sodomy laws, so laws against same-sex sex. And Griswold is the decision that established that the Fourth Amendment did create a right to privacy and therefore for married couples to use contraception. So those are the other three decisions that have specifically been called out by Clarence Thomas as targets to be possibly overturned.
If only we had listened to Anita Hill.
I mean, know, right?
I know.
Anita Hill tried to tell us.
She tried to tell us. And then, I mean, to be fair, people tried to tell us when, you know, Donald Trump nominated three justices to the Supreme Court in his tenure, and everybody, you know, everybody that was paying attention tried to tell us that, you know, we're not being hysterical. This is the rights that they are coming for. This is, you know, it will be Roe first, and then these other decisions will be on the chopping block because the justices are installed there to, as soon as a case got in front of them on these rights, to overturn it. No matter what they said to Congress, no matter what they said in their hearings, they have been screened for being in favor of overturning these decisions. And I think in the dissent, and which was not any, it was written by the three dissenting justices, so we don't know who wrote this passage, but one of the justices, or they all agreed to say it, was, we do not believe that this case is limited to Roe versus Wade. We believe, we don't accept what the majority is saying here, that they're not coming for these other decisions. We think they are, and we're worried about it. So anybody listening to this, paying attention in the US, we should be worried about it. And it's terrifying to see him name those specifically, because those are not just long established rights in the US under the Constitution, but it's something that the government shouldn't be involved in regardless. It's not something you should have to go to court to fight for.
Yeah, I mean, in Canada, like, our prime minister, who overturned our sodomy laws, essentially said the state has no place in the bedrooms of the nation. And that, yes, exactly. Trudeau Senior.
The funny thing is that if there's no right to, like, a family life and privacy, I mean, the people that are the most in favor of smacking laws seem to be the most, you know, anti-abortion. So what are they going to say when people come for them and take away their children because they won't stop hitting them? You know, I mean, I'm not saying that everybody does those two things, but a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of mental cartwheels that are being.
Well, it's almost like they have no consistent values other than patriarchy and domination.
I mean, it's the same. I mean, I just saw a cartoon today. This isn't, you know, original to me, but it was like, it showed a picture of a face mask, violation of my rights. Picture of a uterus, you have no rights to that. Yeah. I mean, like, what is the, yeah, there, I agree. There's just no consistency there. There's a lot of mental gymnastics, but I don't think they care. Honestly, they're not doing the mental gymnastics because there's no consistency other than taking other people's rights away and enhancing their own patriarchal, you know, white supremacist rights. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, so like when people go, how did Trump ever become president? This is it. This is why. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have an uncle who voted for Trump proudly, saying this is the only way to outlaw abortion. And he felt that that was the only way to be a good person. And that was like his reason for voting, wow. Which is because of decades of propaganda for, you know.
I think that is something that the right has been incredibly good at, because basically they, like, these people whose single issue is that they want to ban abortion will crawl over glass to vote for anybody who they think will further that goal even a little bit. And they will do it consistently for 40 years without question to achieve their singular goal. And on the left, we just can't command that kind of loyalty for anything. And then the second something doesn't happen in one term, it's like, well, what's the point of voting anyway? It's like, well, they just voted consistently on a single issue for 40 years to establish, and like, were able to like push it so hard that they were able to establish like minoritarian control over like a handful of and just capture a handful of institutions and get what they wanted. And yeah.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
We care about too many things.
It's true. You can't, you know, you don't lose one election and then say, well, I'm never voting again. It didn't work. That's just the wrong lesson. And I am sensitive to the frustration. Like, I get it. Sometimes you really do want people to do more, but I mean, there's like, to be frank about it, putting on my Democrats Abroad hat, like there's one side trying to take away your rights and there's one side that isn't. And like, you got to vote, you know, we don't get anywhere without the baseline of like side trying to take away your rights is removed from power and shown that that isn't a popular position. And it, I mean, the polling shows that anywhere from 6 in 10 to 8 in 10 people in the US support the right to abortion with, you know, various restrictions or non-restrictions, but it's a popular position. And you need to hold accountable the leaders who oppose it. They need to be asked about it every single second of every single time they're in front of a camera, every time there's a town hall, every time a reporter is in front of them. They need to be asked about these things, not just abortion, but ectopic pregnancy. Do they even understand what it is? They need to be asked about, you know, incomplete miscarriage and sepsis and women dying. They need to be on the record saying, yeah, I'm in favor of women dying. I'm in favor of pregnant people dying, because that's what shows accountability here. Not, oh, I believe in the sanctity of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, ask Democrats too. They should be on the record having to be in support of people who need abortions getting medical care.
Yeah, it's a problem. I was going to say, it's not been that many years ago that you couldn't trust because someone is a Democrat that they were pro-choice. So, I mean, we talk about, and not that to say that the Democrats, everybody that's a Democrat is on the left, because that's not true either, but it wasn't a unifying issue. So now it's time to go forth and legislate and codify these laws like we should have done decades and decades ago.
If it's going to be a government, if it's going to be the government making these decisions about people's bodies and people's rights, then put it into law. It can't be up to the whims of the Supreme Court, which we now know is, you know, in a legitimacy crisis. Like, why would people choose to listen to the decisions of an illegitimate court at this point? So make it law.
I mean, this is another issue, right? It's hard to fight a force that doesn't care about the legitimacy of democratic institutions and doesn't care about the stability of the country. So like, Democrats will always be beholden to having to like respect the rule of law, respect the courts, respect the procedures, because fundamentally, whether I agree with them or not on basically any policy issue, they do believe in America continuing to exist and continuing to have political institutions that are stable and continuing to function as a unified, stable political entity. And one gets the impression that the Republicans do not care if the whole country burns in a few years, if they got what they wanted on the way. And you can't fight a force that's willing to burn everything down while trying to keep everything stable. And I don't know what the answer to that is. Because as you say, these court appointees are, they lied to get their appointments. Kavanaugh was very credibly accused of sexual assault, so was Thomas. Amy Coney Barrett lied her way through her confirmation. And the three of them, not Thomas, but Gorsuch?
Yep.
I can't remember how to pronounce his name. Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh, they were appointed by a president who is possibly maybe going to be in jail in a week. Like, there's just no, like, the Republicans do not care if on the way to getting what they want, they destroy the entire concept of democratic legitimacy.
It's totally true.
I really wish we impeached and removed Supreme Court justices like we did back in the 1700s. I think they impeached the first like head of the Supreme Court, didn't they? Like, one of the first.
I mean, they impeached them. They also, like, presidents would, if they didn't like a decision historically, I mean, not in recent years, but it has happened that they just ignored the decision. They just said, nope, we're not going along with that. I'm the president. I am the executive of the country. And I mean, I don't know if that's always the answer, because that also creates chaos in democratic institutions. But for something as illegitimate as this, or when the court itself has at least three justices that are illegitimate, it's something that has to be on the table. Or they threaten to expand the court, add more justices to balance out a minority, or now a majority, that's against the will of most of the American people. And I think all of those options have to be on the table at this point, because these are such fundamental rights, and because we know that it's not stopping at Roe. It just isn't. And so the defense has to be up now. But I agree with you, Aaron. I don't know what the answer is to a one party and supporters who do not care if they burn the country down on their way, and tried to recently.
Yeah, they did. I mean, that's the thing. This is a fascinating parallel, that all of this about the Dobbs decision is going on at the exact same time that January 6th hearings are happening, which were about literally trying to burn the country down and totally disrespecting democratic legitimacy to get what they want.
Yeah, I saw some of the look at these riots that they're having when it was peaceful protests that did not attack any police officers or anything. It was very, very interesting to see how that did not work from my perspective at all. When they, maybe Fox News watchers, I'm not sure. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, don't speak to anybody who watches it anymore.
I know. I don't think we're solving this one.
No. But I will say, so it took until I was in my 30s to be able to convince my mom and my grandma that being like personally anti-abortion was okay, and it matched with being pro-choice. I've had that conversation a lot here in Scotland, especially with men who are like elected and are maybe in these positions and are kind of asking about it, well, I don't really feel comfortable with the idea of abortion. Like, but that's, you don't have to be pro-abortion to be pro-choice, right? I don't know if you guys had anything to say about that.
It is super interesting. There's been this, at least since I like became conscious of the pro-choice movement, whatever it is. And, you know, there was a while when it was like, let's make abortion safe, legal, and rare. And then there was, you know, these articles where, you know, nobody wants an abortion, but it has to be available for people that do need it. And I sort of, like, I always understood that line of reasoning, and there, I found it persuasive at points. But the older I've gotten and the more I've seen the way the patriarchy tries to control like women's bodies and bodies of people that aren't cishet white males, I have become more adamantly pro-abortion. Like, you should not have to have a pregnancy if you don't want one, full stop. And there really shouldn't be anything anybody else can say about that. But I won't say that it's wrong to have the position of like, I wouldn't get an abortion, but I won't stop anybody else from getting it. I mean, that's ultimately like, if you recognize that it's none of your business and you do what you want with your own choices, then like, welcome to the movement, you know, glad to have you.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised Catholic, like full Catholic school and everything. So it was something that took me a really long time to come to understand about like people being able to be individually not in favor of abortion, but understanding that it's other people's choices. I'm in kind of the same boat as you. The older I've gotten, the more I've gotten not just pro-choice, but full on pro-abortion, in terms of like, it's not a bad thing. If you need an abortion, no matter what, that's your business, and like not safe, legal, and rare, as Hillary Clinton used to say, but like on demand with no apologies. But yeah, totally. Like, it's interesting that you were saying, Kat, that like a lot of men are like, oh, I'm not comfortable with abortion. It's just like, okay, well, you'll never have to have one. This is none of your goddamn business. Like,
I think maybe it's possibly either experiencing a partner having an abortion that they agreed or didn't agree with, or like if it's somebody who's a counselor, an MSP or an MP, you know, trying to figure out a way to articulate their position to people that might not agree with them. Which, so I think it's fair to try and figure out how to reach the most people. Because here we're having the conversation about buffer zones, safe access zones to abortion clinics. And I mean, the thing is that the clinics where you can get reproductive health care is where you go get your pap smears. It's where you go get an IUD. It's where you go to the gender clinic. If you're trans or you're non-binary, you're looking to find out more info on that. So
it's also, you know, kind of like sexual assault survivors get their post sexual assault care.
Yeah. And these are loud, they're using loudspeakers right now, and they can just be any, they can be right outside where they've had to move people from wings of the hospital because they couldn't conduct their appointments. So that's the fight we're having here. And it feels really good to be at that position right now and have something to fight for like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
that's no doubt the tactics they learned from the anti-choice, anti-abortion protesters in the US who have been targeting clinics and zones for decades.
Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to sort of nip it in the bud here and be able to point to what's happened in the US and say, this is the slippery slope and we can't let this stand.
But I'd also like to quick touch on John Mason is he's a Scottish MSP. He's in the same party as Aaron and I here in Scotland. He is very much anti-choice. He's completely, he has said publicly that he was very happy that these rights laid with the states because he equated it with Scotland wanting to have its democratic voice heard. That is not the same, just to be clear. And I think anybody who even believes in like radical local democracy will agree that human rights, basic human rights, should be legislated at the highest level that you can enforce it. I don't know if you guys have anything to add on that.
Yeah, just that I completely agree. Human rights, one, shouldn't be up to a postcode lottery, and two, shouldn't be subject to majoritarian control. I mean, in the case of abortion rights, yes, that is like 50% of the population that has to deal with that. So like, that's not so much a minority rights situation, but human rights broadly, I mean, like, we're talking again about maybe losing Obergefell and Lawrence. Those like, you know, gender and sexual minorities are less than 10% of the population. If our rights are subject to majority will, as opposed to being like codified in a constitution or decided by theoretically a neutral constitutional court, which no longer exists in the US, but you know, then I'm not even sure how our rights are possibly safeguarded in a purely majoritarian situation or in a local democracy situation. Like, I just don't see how it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a philosophical question at some point too. Like, where do these rights come from? And like, why do we have to ask for them if they are human rights? And why do we have to depend on the state to enforce them if they're human rights? I mean, this is like very legal theory stuff, but it's playing out in how the court is deciding our rights. And like, at least as somebody from the US, you always were taught and assumed that the Constitution protected these things and it was sacred. And, you know, the Constitution was about it, like constantly was being used to expand your rights and finding new definitions because they were being extended to people who the Constitution hadn't originally been written to protect. And now you're kind of like, oh, that was based on nothing. That was just the whims of like the good enough people being in power enforcing those things. And some people really believe them and some people were in support of them, but there was a big enough minority of people that didn't, that they've now managed to impose that like radicalism, that recalcitrance on the whole country to claw back some of those rights. And so then what, you know, like, I mean, it is incumbent upon us as citizens to pay attention and to like, be active to protect those rights, and especially not just for yourself, but like for other people that don't have as many as you, and how for this is going to affect even more than you. Because yeah, it just means that like that we don't know who protects our rights. So it's kind of down to us to figure out how we do it now. And I mean, there's like, yeah, it's sure, it's voting in the next election, it's registering, it's making sure that your friends are registered and voting and doing your research on the candidates, asking their positions on abortion and what they will do to protect it. But it's also like finding out how you support your local abortion fund, you know, finding out how you spread the word to people that might need the pills, finding out how you can help women get to another state, or women or people who need an abortion, there I did it again, get to a place where they can access it. So, I mean, if like, because you don't have to like depend on the law or the court to establish those rights for yourself, or for ourselves, like we have to go out and protect them ourselves too, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think what you said is really important, because when we talk about how like the laws can really only be changed by making sure that people get out and vote in support of pro-choice candidates and pro actual government candidates, people tend to think like, oh, well, voting isn't doing the job. Like, why do you want, voting is something you do once every couple of years, but like organizing and funding abortion funds and protesting and calling your legislators. That's something you do every single day. There's no opposition between direct action and between organizing and voting. You have to do all of them. And it's exhausting, but you just have to, because it isn't fair and we shouldn't have to, but you've gotta. I mean, like,
yeah, what's the other alternative?
What's the alternative? I mean, in Canada, the reason that abortion is basically just treated like a medical procedure that doesn't really have any other restrictions on it than like heart surgery, you know, which should be performed by a licensed professional, but otherwise, is because there was a doctor, Dr. Morgenthaler, who, when abortion was illegal, was just like, nah, I'm going to do it. Try to stop me, basically. And his court case is essentially what overturned our abortion laws. And then there was some parliamentary shenanigans. And basically, because Canada is actually really terrible at being stable, we never actually passed any new laws. And it became, no, I'm serious. We have a bunch of legislation that just never happened because like our governments are really, really unstable and things get to the Senate and then die on the order paper when like an election gets called. And essentially they tried to introduce new abortion laws after the laws got struck down and then there was another election. And then they're like, you know what, this is kind of settled now. Let's just not.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah. But like, so there's parliamentary shenanigans in there, but like at the end of the day, it was because a very brave and principled doctor was just like, no, I'm going to do it. What are you going to do about it? So, yeah.
That was
legal decisions. That was legislation, but that was also someone very, very brave doing direct action. We need everything.
Totally. We need everything. And all the time. Like
all the time.
All the time. I mean, there's like midterms coming up and then, you know, like there's a lot to be done. There's a lot of candidates that have to be held to their word or pushed further on their stance on abortion. There are, you know, federal laws to be passed if this is the way we're going to do it. There's state laws to be passed. There's state laws to be repealed, like these terrible 6-week bans and these rights to not cross state lines. I mean, there's a lot of organizing work to be done and a lot of advocacy work to be done. Mm-hmm. You know,
one of the great things I love about living in Scotland is that local politics are so important. Like people vote, like, see, if you only get 40% turnout for a council election, people are upset. I'm like, that's like a presidential election in America, you know, like they're like, oh, we didn't get to 60 like last time. And it's like, wow, this is amazing. And councillors really kind of are a big deal, you know, in a way that I didn't know who my councillors were back in America, but it is this like continuous. And, you know, I haven't lived in America for 6 years, but I still vote in every primary. I still look up, you know, I still get my full sheet and research every single one before I go and vote. But it doesn't matter. Wherever you can vote, it's really your duty to be an informed voter and try and get the best candidate out there.
Yeah, ask them.
That was just my rant.
I mean, it goes down even to like in the U.S., the local school board. Like, is the school board teaching that abortion is are they teaching religion, which is not supposed to be involved in children's education at all?
Until the decision yesterday.
I know, LOL, Jersey State. But yeah, I mean, what's the school board saying? Are they presenting this as just like a normal medical procedure? Are they answering kids' questions about it in a normal way, like everything else that you educate kids about? Or are they teaching regressive things? And the same thing with like policies on gay marriage and, you know, relations between adults. Sorry, you can hear my dog patting in. He's also very pro-abortion, my dog, to show his support. So yeah, I mean, there's like, and then you can be talking to, like, you have kids, talk to the parents in your neighborhood about what they, you know, what they want their kids to learn about and know. Maybe it's the other side, but it's not just elections and voting, though that is like the floor. Like everybody says, voting is the floor. Everything else is stuff that we have to do also. Mm-hmm. And you might lose, like probably we will, like the right lost for a long time. And then they voted and organized and got people on school boards and, you know, eventually they've got to this day. So it's a good lesson.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
There's never an end.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I think that's really key what you said, especially about school boards, local elections. So, and what you were saying, Kat, about voting all the way down the ballot is that in America, you do have so much potential for what you can, because people run unopposed and win on school boards because people aren't paying attention, and that they can do basically whatever they want to education in that area. So if they've got people running unopposed and going in and banning books with any kind of feminist or queer content, then we can have people run unopposed and do the exact opposite. Like, that is like the that is like where there's so much room to win, and people kind of focus on presidential elections and forget that there's so much power to be had.
Also, school. I mean, not, I'm just thinking beyond the political sphere, like a lot of these businesses are now announcing that they'll support their employees if they need to travel out of state for abortion care, which is great. But what politicians are they donating to? You know, where's their political action committee giving money? Are they offering child care to people who need it, who work for them? Also, if people do choose to have children, like reproductive justice, reproductive rights is bigger than abortion. And one of the ways that you reduce abortion, if you really care about that, which I don't, but like you make it easier for people who want to have children, you give them options. And that includes like subsidized childcare. So these businesses also like are very powerful with the government in the US. For better or worse, corporations have a ton of influence and they should be mobilized and motivated to use it by people that work for them and people that buy from them and people that interact with them.
That is a good point. Yeah, I always look at what corporations are trying to make a, you know, like love bomb or not, that's not the right word, but like make a campaign off of everything.
Right. I mean, they've all got their gay pride logos now on social media, but like, are they giving money to politicians who want to take away gay marriage? Probably.
Oh yeah, they absolutely are. That's like, yeah. I just want to like circle back to what you said, Kat, about how like there's no end, like there's no permanent victory. Like we have to win and then we have to win again and then we have to win again. Because what Roe being overturned has taught us is that like even when we think we have a victory, something that stood the test of time for like, what was Roe, like 72, 74?
72, 73, yep.
72, so something that stood the test of time for 50 years, that's half a century, and then it's gone. It reminds me of, have you ever read the essay, One Atom of Justice, One Molecule of Mercy by Alexandra Rowland?
No.
Oh, it's just like, basically, this is like the thing that I go back to every time that something horrible like this happens. And she's talking about storytelling and about hope. I really love where she says, it's not about glory or noble deeds. It's not about an end result because there is no end. There's always a tomorrow. And when the sun rises again, we'll still have a dam holding the water back for now. But entropy is real and dams must be maintained. And it takes all of us to do it. And it's done by linking arms with the people next to you, by building a community with deliberate intent. I just go back to that kind of every time we have a setback like this, because there is no end. There's no permanent victory, but all we can do is link arms with the people next to us and keep fighting.
Yeah. And even though it's exhausting sometimes to hear that, it also gives me hope, because this isn't the end. Like, it's not, you know, set in stone that all these rights are going to be repealed. It's time to make our case. So Erin, do you want to ask your question to Naomi? Because I won't ask it right.
Okay, so there's one question that I ask everybody that we talk to. This is something I've stolen from Carrie Poppy, who is one of my favorite journalists, which is there something that you wish we had asked you?
I think that this is going to be an extremely, like, I think, annoying answer to you, but for putting my Democrats Abroad hat on, how do you get involved with Democrats Abroad to make sure that you protect people's right to choose back in the U.S., which is, all right. go to democratsabroad.org. I don't know if you have show notes, but I think we should put that in the show notes so people, you know, who are motivated after this and are voters in the U.S. and want to get involved and protect people's right to have an abortion should. If you like are thinking now, like, oh yeah, I really do need to get voting and do my research, go to votefromabroad.org, which gives you everything you need to know state by state, when your primary deadlines are, when to request your ballot. If you have problems getting your ballot, there's a helpline. So it's a really great resource for U.S. citizens living abroad. That's votefromabroad.org. Yeah. And so get involved, even if it's not Democrats Abroad Scotland, check out the website, see what you can do and what might be interesting to you in terms of protecting and doing this There's no end, like Kat just talked about. So that's my annoying Democrats abroad answer. And if there's anything else I wish you would have asked me, no, I think that about covers it. I have some you know, ranty things to say about the justices, but you know, karma will come, and they know that they're terrible people who are doing terrible things to a lot of people who don't deserve it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on, Naomi.
Thank you for inviting me, and thanks for this conversation. It was really great. Okay.